Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Hi folks, and welcome to another edition of Farming Aotearoa for 2025, sponsored by Rural News, the newspaper that gets the top stories to farmers every week. And once again, we have agricultural journalist Peter Burke with us today, who works for Rural News. Peter is in studio with me today to bring us up to date on what's happening in the past month. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Catherine. So, yeah, it's farming still never seems to... We're into what we call conference season now, so everyone's having their conferences, but the weather doesn't seem to respect conferences. So
we've had some weather, all right.
We've had a lot of weather and a lot talked about, and I think I'm going to focus particularly today on what's been happening down south, and particularly in the Nelson-Tasman area, because that's where they've had a really bad time. And just the last few hours I've been talking to the people down there about this, and they're saying, one of the guys there was saying, it's the worst of all the floods he's seen in his time there. And he's been there forever. Ben Orchard has been, that's Richard Kempthorne, who's been the mayor of Tasman, is now the head of the Rural Support Trust. And he just said it's a combination of the event we had a few weeks back, well, a week or so back, and then, of course, the weekend that we've just been here, another spell of rain has come through. And it's just got worse and worse and worse. And... 30 roads have been closed in the area, which is massive if you think about it. That's just the starting point. Kids haven't been able to get to school in some cases. And the damage to all the properties, and we're talking here in this area of a mixture of farming. So there was livestock farming, like there's sheep and beef, there's dairy, and there's horticulture, big horticulture area, kiwi fruit, apples, hops, blueberries, the whole lot. There's a lot of stuff there. The only good news for the fruit has been that it's come at the end of the picking season. So unlike Gabriel, which occurred in the middle of the harvest and you had kiwi fruit on the vine and apples on the trees, most of the fruit has been picked in that area. That doesn't mean to say they're out of the woods, because you've got the situation in the horticulture particularly. We'll talk about that specifically if you like. It's an interesting one. That much like Gabriel, you've got silt that's come through.
Yep. And we're talking like a metre sometimes.
We are talking a metre or more potentially. Yep. And we're also talking about water lying on those. And what we know is that that in those cases there is a risk of, for want of a better word, root rot occurring, because the roots get too wet, they get saturated and they...
Nothing's draining away.
The good news a little bit is talking to one of the horticultural people the other day was that the learnings from Gabriel are being passed on to this area. So prior to Gabriel, no one really knew what might happen. And the orchardists in Te Rāwhiti and in particular Hawke's Bay really just took some chances and they paid off.
Okay.
So the good news for the Nelson growers is that they have the knowledge that has gone before them to help them get through this in some ways. Now, it's different. Every you can't say that every orchard has got silt and every orchard's flooded. They're different. And I guess that's the issue, that everyone will have a different story to tell, a different problem to deal with. Time is not necessarily on their side. You've got to get rid of that silt and you've got to get rid of that water as quickly as you possibly can to avoid the long-term things. And the issue that you have in that is that while Hawke's Bay bounced back quite well, we've seen the season, the Hawke's Bay crop of apples has been good.
But it did take a while, though.
Well, it took a year or so, a couple of years, but we've had this year, the crop has been very good. And okay. I think what's interesting is that the trees did, by and large, bounce back. There was, some died, and more possibly will die. Possibly, though, we just don't know what will happen next year for apples in, for example, in Nelson, because it's not the biggest apple growing area, but it is, I think, the second largest apple growing area in the country. And then it isn't a big producer of kiwi fruit. Again, you've got the Bay of Plenty and you've got Northland and others that are doing it, but still, it's a significant number and it's big for the local economy because we're talking about a district, Tasman, is very heavily dependent on the primary sector. So, for the horticultural, that's the issue there. I guess for those in the pasture, there is one theory which again has been known for a long time, and it was carried out in areas such as Te Rāwhiti and Hawke's Bay, that if the silt is not too deep, you can let it stay there and dry, and then you can mix it up with the other soil and you can grass it. And that does work too, because not all silt is bad. Some of it may be quite good in nutrients, and there may be that. So there is a possibility for the sheep and beefy guys there that they can bring that back. Although, having said that, we now know that, of course, a lot of land was lost with the Motueka River. It just took land out, and lots of orchards and farmland is gone forever, ending up in Tasman Bay. And if you hear, I was watching television the other night, and they were saying that the sediment going into Tasman Bay is not good for the ecology of the ocean there.
No, it's a smothering seagrasses and all yes. sorts. Yeah,
yeah. So I think, you know, all these things, there's a multiplicity of effects yeah. of one thing. The rain does knock out pasture. It knocks out. It puts silt down. But also, what we're hearing from those properties around the Motueka River, which is the worst area hit, is that it's not only just the ground that's been affected. You've got pack houses, you've got sheds, you've got implement sheds, you've got all that sort of stuff as well. And, you know, looking at some of the pictures on television, they're horrifying, really. And it's amazing that no one has been killed in that situation, because it certainly is very dramatic. I'm not saying it's the same as Esk Valley, but there are lookalikes in it. And if you look at the images of Esk Valley, and it came out and I was up there for that, and what I'm seeing from Motueka, there were some similarities. And I think Richard Kempthorne said to me, well, it's not as widespread as Gabriel was. It's a smaller area, we know that. But there were some lookalikes in it. So there's all that sort of stuff in it. The next bit really is going to be the cleanup. Mm. Now, the word is that for some it'll take months, for others it will take years. And you've got things like I know in Hawke's Bay, roads, certain areas of just getting access to where they were 2 years ago. We may see the same in Tasman as well. It's the infrastructure that's the big thing. That gets the farmers into their properties and their products out of them. That's a problem. So I don't know what the answer is, but all I'm told is by Richard Kempthorne, who is the voice and the knowledge person there, they're now surveying farms to see what the issues are for them. They're putting together a piece of information to put to government to say this is what we think it is. But he is talking, he said, of multi-millions of dollars to repair this thing. Not hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's multi-millions of dollars. So you've got all those factors in there. And I guess what they're now looking at, they're getting groups like Task Force Green, which is a group of volunteers that help out. There's another thing called Task Force Kiwi, which is a group of people, volunteers who come from police, emergency services. There are others who can come in and give advice and help around these things, and those people are now being there. And there's an appeal out at the moment to get people to come in and offer to volunteer to help people, because I can't only imagine what it must be like to find that, you know, you've had a metre of water through your house. You've lost your carpet.
Twice.
And one of the comments made to me was, in the past couple of 10 days, some horticulturalists spent $70,000 to get things repaired. Weekend later.
Oh, that's just
back to the same thing, you know. So terrible. Your heart must go out to these people who are.
And no grants, you know, on the table yet. As far as we know from this broadcast, anyway.
No, we don't know what's going to happen there. I think the government's going to have to step up, and, you know, despite what everyone says about insurance and all that sort of thing, you can't plan for these things.
No.
There's got to be something in there that says you can't sort of say, well, there's going to be an earthquake in Wellington, let's not insure in Wellington or whatever you might do, but we just don't know those things.
Yeah.
You know? I think the worst thing in this whole thing is that it's a cumulative effect of both events. And what horticulture people, Kate Scott, the CEO of Hort New Zealand, was telling me that it was bad enough the first time, but the second time more silt came down. So there were different events.
Okay.
And I guess possibly that rain loosened some of the stuff. Also, by the way, forestry has been affected as well. The word is that the rain in the forest areas weakened the rooting system of some of the trees. The winds came in, knocked them over. So there's going to be forestry loss as well. So I think our hearts go out to our people down in the top of the south for what they're having to put up with and how they get through it. But, you know, it'll be tough going.
Jeez.
And your really heart does go out for them. So that's the thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no way that you can. The Rural Support Trust are doing the best they can. They're getting there. They've got people on the ground there, helping people out, looking after mental health, which is going to be an issue. It'll be a big issue there. I suspect that'll be one thing. They're making sure that they've got. And Hort New Zealand are doing the same. They're being. Getting in touch with growers to make sure they're getting the help they need, not only physical help, but also mental health. And I guess the banks have to be in there too to help those people out, because it's going to be a. It's not going to be on the size of Gabriel, but it's going to be big. And yeah. I think the it'll be. We've seen that already in the Sounds with the previous events a few years ago when roads got knocked down. It's a very vulnerable place, and all New Zealand roads are vulnerable. Let's be realistic.
True.
You know, it's the nature of a business. Anyway, sorry to want it, but it is a big. It's the big issue of the moment.
It is, absolutely. Really, our hearts really go out to them.
Yeah.
It must be so stressful for them as well. Terrible.
Yeah, it is.
All right, well, talk to me then about progress deals with
India,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Indian one has always been talked up by the present government and others, I think. Everyone said, let's try and get a deal with India. And that makes sense. What we're seeing in the last few weeks has been a group of negotiators from New Zealand, officials, not politicians, meeting with their counterparts in Delhi to try and work through this thing. It's a big... Most trade deals take 3 or 4 years to put together, and this one probably will take that sort of time, I suspect, as well, because there are something like 19 chapters to go through. So it's not just, one thing, let's do a deal and here's a pound of butter and take it or leave it sort of thing. There's issues there for New Zealand. The one issue that probably is not going to happen for New Zealand is dairy. India is a big producer of milk. And the average herd size is quite small. It might be 5 or 6 or 7. You know, there's lots of dairy farmers who produce milk, mainly sold for the local market. But certainly the Indian government is not going to in any way have imports of dairy products, which would upset the political landscape in any way at all with one of their key voters, which is farmers. So the things that will be happening, I know what they're looking at the moment is apples, for example. I didn't realise India was quite a big apple producer. It is.
Ah.
But it's seasonal. So what New Zealand is saying is, well, all right, we won't put our apples in a newer season. It's a different season to ours. But why don't we combine and we'll provide apples in the off-season for you, which means that there was apples on the shelf for the entire 12 months. Now, there's a lot of merit in that, because once you take a product off the shelf, it takes time to build up to get them, you want to come back and buy it again. So the theory being, this is a benefit to both sides, that we can get a foothold in India. Tariffs on apples at the moment are around about 50%, I think, from them. They're quite high. If we can get reduced tariffs, get access there, better access, that would claim would be for the benefit of both countries. And I think that's it's a thing that New Zealand has used in the past with a lot of its exports, that we to say Northern Hemisphere, where we provide product in the off-season. And you're seeing that with Zespri now, for example, growing its kiwi fruit in places like Italy and Spain and France to make sure that kiwi fruit stay on the shelves in the Northern Hemisphere for the full 12 months of the year. They don't just come out of New Zealand for 6 months and then go off the shelf. So it's having it there all the time. And that has always been a philosophy of New Zealand. That's how I think that they're doing that. So what we've got is we've had a team of about 15 negotiators there. I gather the Indians are twice that size in terms of numbers going to the table, but talking about different aspects of it. So it will be, by all accounts, one of these good, comprehensive, trade deals if they can get over the line. The present government certainly has done a lot to get that there. We've seen Todd McClay make umpteen visits to India. I think within a few days of being elected, Todd was on the plane to India. And we've seen Prime Minister Luxon there, we've seen Winston Peters there, we've seen other ministers there, we've seen delegations from horticulture, from other industries going to there. So there's been a lot of Indians coming to New Zealand as well. There is a lot between New Zealand and India. We have a large Indian population in New Zealand, of course. I think they're the largest immigrant populations in New Zealand. So there is some things, there's some cultural things there. So hopefully we will see something going, but it's a long process. What they do is, interesting, I never knew this, but they have what they call virtual sessions. So the officials will meet about every week, virtually. Then every month they'll meet in person to talk through, and then that's sort of how it goes. And then we'll see the politicians come in there at pressure points, if you like, quite often, or just to kick things along a bit, just to keep the political stuff flowing. So that's how it operates. It's a quite a it's a very hard process, but it's something that's and the other food item I should have mentioned was also Manuka honey, which is what New Zealand's hoping to get into. India does produce honey, but they don't produce the high quality Manuka that we do. Therefore, our argument would be that our honey is a higher price point than theirs, therefore it's not such a problem to them. They could easily go along with that. So that's what we're seeing unfolding at the moment in the in Delhi, and hopefully there'll be many more meetings in Delhi and other places, probably in Wellington, I suspect, at some stage to try and progress this. It's not talked about. The chances are now, let's see what happens. The answer is show me your money sort of thing, and maybe it's there, I don't know. It's going to be a bit of a challenge.
Okay. All right, talk to me then about dairy profitability.
Interesting stories here. That at the moment, we've seen talk about a high dairy payout price. I think it's $10 a kilo plus for dairy farmers beyond the farm gate price for the coming season, which looks a lot of money. But what the analysts are saying now is, yes, that sounds a lot, but you've got to look at it in the context of how that fits. Is that really, in real terms, what it should be? And what they're saying is that it's good, but it's not great. That we've had better years. In fact, they're going back and saying that, you know, back in, I think, the 2013s and 2014s, we were making, there was a better return, if you like. It was more profitability. So what the message really is that we're getting good numbers, but don't get too excited about the good numbers, because they look good, but be aware there is also this creeping volatility sitting around the corner at the moment too. You can imagine, you know, you've got the Middle East war, you've got different things going on all over the show. And the only certainty is uncertainty, probably, if you want to put it that way. That's what you've got to put up with. And while the dairy thing's looking good, we had a great year for dairy. There's just a little bit of caution being thrown out there at the moment, and saying, yeah, don't get too excited, guys. It might, guys and women, it's just a bit of a, you know, it's good, but the debt levels are dropping. Interest rates are easing a bit. There's good conditions at the moment, by and large, for production. So we've had good weather right through. We've had a relatively mild autumn, but a rain came through at the end. We're into calving now in some places around the country. Case will be just how good this whole thing fell out. We know in parts of Taranaki, for example, we've had drought. They've used a lot of supplement up, so they're going to be a bit pinched for food, for supplement feed, coming into if they get a bad winter, and that's going to be a case. So there's just that little bit of words of caution around the dairy side, saying don't pop the champagne corks just yet, guys. Wait till see what happens. The $10 payout is a baseline. It's what is necessary to actually make a profit. So people are going to be aware that's a good number, and it will certainly ensure that farmers will make money. But a lot of farmers in Taranaki made no money at all because of the drought. They had to buy supplementary feed. So there's all those things in the mix. So that's where that's sitting at.
Did you say you had some good news, though, for sheep and beef farmers?
Well, I think the good news is that the meat exports are starting to look quite good at the moment too. We're getting a little bit of an upturn there. Strong months coming through. We've had May, the Meat Industry Association, which sort of looks after the umbrella organisation for all the processing companies. They've been saying that it's been we've had a good exports worth 1.5 billion, an increase in last year for that time of the year. The volumes are slightly down, but the prices are up. What there seems to be at the moment is a bit of a drop in volumes being produced around the world, and we're getting the prices are moving upwards a bit. And we think we talked the last time of saying that New Zealand thinks it's big, but in fact I think we're tiny. I think South America puts into China in a week the same amount of meat that we put in a year.
Yeah, you mentioned that last time. It sort of blows your mind a little
bit. It does. It's a figure that I never really, you just sort of look at it and say, well, wow. What's happening also is that the United States, despite all the carry-on that's going on there, is still proving to be a very good market for New Zealand.
Okay.
And I think I talked last time, too, about tariffs and saying, well, okay, we've got a 10% tariff likely in August. It's not good, but it won't be the worst. Others are going to get worse than we will. Interesting thing about Canada is starting to prove a big growth market for beef at the moment. So 65 million out of Canada in the last month or so, which is good. One of the standout markets at the moment, believe it or not, which is lovely. We still have a bit of a problem with them over dairy, though. There's still a little bit of a battle going on with Canada and dairy at the moment, which is still not resolved. But
okay,
one of those things. So yeah, interesting.
All right. What about the mystery of banking?
Well, it's a fascinating thing about I was up at a seminar a few weeks back in Hawera, where a guy called Andrew Lamming, who works for a company that specialises in offering advice to farmers around finance and banking in particular. And he said, a lot of farmers, while their main thing focuses on what interest rate they're going to get, but he said, what is a good interest rate? What are the conditions of it? And do you really understand why they will give you a loan and why they won't give you a loan? And I found that a little bit fascinating. It wasn't just around, are you a good farmer? It might be because the bank has a lot of dairy loans on its books, therefore it doesn't want another one.
Mm.
And it might be, what he's saying is, don't be too disheartened if you get turned down by these guys, because you may be perfectly okay. Another bank may well take you on, but that bank that you traditionally deal with is saying no, because we don't want any more of dairy. Their books are full, and because they've got a limit on, they've got to also have, I guess, extra money in their own coffers to support those loans, because dairy or farming is considered a greater risk than urban.
Mm.
So that's why interest rates for farmers are generally higher than, say, the mortgage rates are. That's just the nature of the things. They're seen as a risk. Farmers will say, why? I don't know. But what he's saying is that the comment was something like, banking is a mixture of science and art, which I thought was quite fascinating. The turn down of a loan may be for purely subjective reasons on the part of the bank, rather than the numbers. The numbers might be perfectly good, everything adds up, great, the risk is low, all that, and no, we don't want you because we've got one too many of you guys in our system. Sorry, can't do it. And so what he is saying is, come and talk to the experts, get some advice from us as to how we can do it. We can perhaps set you up with others that can help you get you through those things and get you the loan that you want, and with the conditions that are better for you, for your own particular situation, because they'll vary, and we know that every farm is different. They've got different needs, different assets, if you like, in all sorts of ways. And the other comment was around succession planning, and that's a big issue, of course, at the moment. Well, how do you let a husband and wife who have been farming for 30 years hand on that farm to their siblings? It's a very big issue.
Mm.
And it's been a big issue for a long time. It's getting bigger now, I guess, because the cost of land is going up. So the question is, how do you give everyone a fair shot at it? I mean, do you make, how is the parents get enough money for retirement? And is the chance of buying into it reasonable for the young people so they can get into it at a reasonable cost? Or do you form some sort of corporate relationship? And what he's saying is, there may have to be some hybrid solutions to this, as opposed to just the standard sort of hand down the farm. The old days was the oldest son got the farm, everyone just suffered it. The idea was the boys got the farm, the girls got the education, or something like that. It was a really quite sexist sort of approach to it. Nowadays, of course, we know that young women can run the farm as well as young men can, and probably better in many cases. So, and I think women play a greater role probably in farming than they're given credit for. They do a lot of the books, works. I think the brains behind some of the farming is through women. There's an argument that says that men do the recreational cultivation. I know, it's, I shouldn't say that, but I've said it so it's too late to unsay it, as they say. Anyway.
So finally, what do rugby and farming have in common, Peter?
Well, one of the great, one of the joys of this job I have in is to get out of Kuku, as it were, where I sort of, I'm just about to leave.
Okay.
And go up to Hawera. I went up to Hawera to a dairy, a day organised by the Dairy NZ and the Taranaki Dairy Trust. And we had a lot of very good speakers there talking about what's going on. But one of the guest speakers, or the, I think, the best guest speaker, was Conrad Smith.
Okay, sounds a very familiar name to
very,
me.
Most people know Conrad Smith. The what they call him, Snakey, I think was his nickname.
Okay.
Snakey, apparently, because he slithered around the field. That's
no one could catch him.
No one could catch him. And I think probably, and others will disagree, but probably the best centre three-quarter New Zealand's ever had as an All Black. He's played an amazing role in that, and still has a role in rugby too. He's actually saying he's refereeing at the moment. He's doing refereeing.
Okay.
He's also working for the International Players Association, doing some work with players. And he talked about how the road to a high performance as a rugby player. And he mentioned interesting things. It obviously is a qualified lawyer. So he the first thing he wanted to do was to get his degree. He was Francis Douglas Memorial College, New Plymouth, educated. Duplessis Corriffy did that too as well. There's a couple of them, quite some prominent, and Geordie Barrett did too. There's a lot of very good prominent All Blacks have come through that amazing school, New Plymouth. But he was saying that as a rugby player, the things that they have to do, it's like performance review is every week. You know, you finish a game on Saturday, and on Monday you're up against the coaches who review you, and sometimes they will give you a hard time. He said one time Steve Hansen gave him a really hard time, and he said, I don't think I did anything terribly wrong. He said, I went to Hansen afterwards and said, what's this all about? He said, well, just remember, Snakey, every now and again I have to give the leaders a bit of a going over as well as the other players.
Ah, okay.
So that was it. But he also talked about this reviewing thing, and they go through that process and how they deal with it. And how they deal with adversity, because you can imagine if you were playing a match and you lose it and you think, oh, it was my fault, how do I get over it? The answer is to get over it and get on with it. And to and it's sort of the common way of dealing with adversity in rugby is not dissimilar to how we deal with it in everyday life, really. Don't stress about everything that's wrong. Think about the things that got you to where you are successfully, as opposed to one or two things you might have done wrong on the field one day, or in your farming operation one day you made a mistake. Don't get hung up about that mistake. Think about, 98% of this farm is very good. I've done that. And that was the message, really, that that don't just focus on getting over things and not and just putting things behind you, focusing on what you can do, get it done well, get it done right. And don't be despondent about everything that goes, that one thing that might you might think is being a thing. Don't get hung up about it. So the message for those farmers was that, you know, and also the message for him was get off farm every now and again. Just get some other friends. Don't make your life the farm. I mean, some people make rugby their life. And he said, I never did for me. He rose, he came out of university and started to play rugby. In 12 months, he was in the Lions, in the Crusade, in the Hurricanes, and All Black in the space of a year.
Wow.
And but he said, that was, my goal was not necessarily to be an All Black. I just became one.
Right.
Whereas some kids today go into the academies with the intention of being an All Black, and their whole life is around that. And the risk of that is that if they don't succeed, then where do they go?
Yeah.
So that this was a little bit about just saying, just have other things around you, so that if things do go wrong, you can have other achievements in your life.
It's good philosophy for life in general, really.
And to me, I've heard a lot of guests. I'm not a motivational speaker, so I loathe them by and large. But he, I think, was one that I felt was really on the money. And as a and to top it off, was a really nice individual as well. You couldn't meet a more friendly, pleasant, unassuming, nice guy. So, you know, Conrad Smith, hero.
Fantastic. Thank you, Peter.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.